Wednesday, February 11th, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado, coming to you today on a sunny day here in the Mile High City. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday. This is actually our 10th episode, and we give you just a little bit different look at the world of sports. Try to mix in some humor and give you something a little bit different than you're going to get anywhere else. Just so you know, we are working to make this podcast bigger and better, give you a more full experience. Got some things in the works. I don't want to let them out just yet, but we are working on a couple things. Over the next few months, we're trying to get this a little bit better. So make sure that you're letting your friends, your coworkers, your relatives, whoever it might be, let them know they need to jump on the bandwagon now before it gets all full. A couple places you can download the podcast at. You can get it at Podomatic. You can get it at podcastdirectory.com. You can subscribe to it in iTunes. If you need to contact me, or if you have any questions about any of this, feel free to hit me up. A couple places you can contact me. If you got feedback, you got a comment, you got a question, you got a concern, whatever it might be, you can reach me a couple different places. Find me at Twitter at DailyDose22, DALY Dose 22. You can always reach me there. I'll live tweet some big events. I'll live tweet some of the bigger games, that kind of stuff. You can find me on there. You can find me on Facebook. If you're, you know, tired of hearing about the, you know, person you went to school with 20 years ago about their third marriage, you can find me on Facebook. I'll at least give you some sports takes and something a little more interesting to spice up that Facebook feed. You can find me at cd.daily.dose. A couple different ways you can get a hold of me. You know, we got a lot of things to get to today. Going to talk a little bit of NBA. Obviously, All-Star Weekend is coming up. We've got some college basketball to talk. Might have a chance to talk a little bit of Major League Baseball and a little bit of NFL. And as usual, a very popular segment, we do have our Daily Dose Top 5. Trust me on this. You don't want to miss this one today. Should be an interesting one today. Few things. First off, this week, like I said, it's my duty to help you, inform you. Don't forget, it is Valentine's Day on Saturday. Are you ready? Do you have, you know, the significant other or others in your life taken care of? Because Valentine's Day is on Saturday. And Valentine's Day, man, it's a tough one. If you want a holiday to just disappoint you, no matter what, this is it. This is it. You want awkwardness? Check. We got it. You want failed expectations? Again, check. You got it. There's no way that it can possibly live up to the way the commercials and the card stores and the flower shops and there's no way it can live up to the hype. There is no way it'll live up to that. Hope you're ready. I hope you're taking care of business. I know that you can get yourself in trouble. If your significant other tells you, I don't want anything, make sure you don't get me anything, just know it's a lie. Don't believe the lie. You will get yourself in trouble if you buy into the lie. Here's something else to think about. If you're single, do not get with anyone until Sunday. I don't care if you meet somebody at 11:55 on Valentine's Day night. That someone is going to want a gift. They're going to want a gift, and they're going to be like, hey, you had 5 minutes. Where's my flowers? You had 5 minutes. Where's my ring? Don't do it. Don't do it. Above all else, this Valentine's Day, remember, if you are single and you're sad about being alone on Valentine's Day, take heart, because no one loves you on the other 364 days either. So it's no big deal. It's no big deal. Just stay positive, you know. But I'm a glass half full kind of guy. Hey, breaking news coming out in the sports world. We've got a couple things we want to get to. First off, longtime college basketball coach Jerry Tarkanian has passed away at the age of 84. And Tarkanian, got a couple people we want to talk about today. We had a few people that we've lost recently in the world of sports. But Jerry Tarkanian, say what you will about him, he obviously had his battles, you know, with the NCAA. He was with Nevada Las Vegas. He had a dynasty going there, had a lot of great players. Jerry Tarkanian does pass away today at the age of 84. You know, he was an innovator. He was a guy who preached defense and the running game and that kind of thing. Had a lot of great players, you know, play for him. Tarkanian, he won 729 games in his Division I record. Was also at Long Beach State and at Fresno State. always a competitive team. I guess if I had to go back to a couple memories that I would have of Tarkanian, obviously the run they had when they beat Duke in the national championship game, and the way that team played with Larry Johnson and Anderson Hunt and Stacey Ogman and Greg Anthony, that phenomenal, talented team. Didn't necessarily always have the scholarly types in his program, but did always have very, very talented players. But I'll tell you the memory that stands out for me, maybe even more so than that national championship game, was during that run. You might remember Nevada Las Vegas in the 1990 regional actually played Loyola Marymount with Paul Westhead and that run-and-gun style that they played. And that Loyola Marymount team, obviously they had lost Hank Gathers, but that was a team that could score points. I mean, they would get up and down the floor. In fact, that year, Loyola Marymount in the tournament had beaten Michigan, the team with Ramil Robinson and that group that had won the national championship the year before. Loyola Marymount had put 149 on them earlier in the tournament. And so this was a team that when you said UNLV versus Loyola Marymount, this is going to be a run and gun, and UNLV, I don't know if you can run with these guys, because these guys get up and down the floor, and if you watch some of those games, I mean, down the floor, quick shot, and they were high percentage, even long range shooters. But this game, you turned it on and you said, okay, we're going to see if UNLV, if they can run, you know, with this Loyola Marymount team. That's what they did. UNLV ran them out the gym. It was 131-1. I mean, beat them by 30. You sat there and said, if you think you guys are running fast, UNLV is running by you. And that's probably one of the memories I will take from Jerry Tarkanian. Obviously had his battles with the NCAA, was never shy about challenging the NCAA, and in fact actually sued the NCAA and got a check from them because they had, you know, infringing on his rights and kind of coming after him for at sometimes no reason. They always were accusing him of different things. Actually went after them and won some money. Lost Jerry Tarkanian today. Interesting guy. We're going to talk a little bit more about some other people we've actually lost this past week a little bit later. Little League Baseball. Let's talk a little bit about Little League Baseball. Little League Baseball has stripped the U.S. championship from the Chicago-based team, Jackie Robinson West, and has suspended their coach for violating a rule prohibiting the use of players who live outside the geographic area that the team represents. They're going to pull that from them. And I guess it gets, you know, passed on to the Las Vegas team or whatever. The way they found this out, apparently was an opposing coach kind of ratted them out. I don't know why you would care that much. Isn't this just another example of adults screwing things up for the kids? You know, the kids weren't out there saying, oh, hey, let's get this kid from a different area and let's get this kid from that area. This, it's always the adults getting in the way. We may have to have a show where we talk about just youth sports in general. And I have a couple people I may want to bring in on that. But it always just seems like the adults go out. Have you seen Friday Night Tykes? If you want a prime example of adults screwing things up for kids trying to play a game that is fun for them, watch the show Friday Night Tykes. I think it's on Esquire TV. Take a look at that, and you'll see just how easy adults get in and mess everything up for the kids. But yeah, it looks like we're gonna take the U.S. title away from the team in Chicago. The problem I have when you vacate titles like this, the problem I have is that we all watch the game. Like, you can say it later. You can say, well, we're taking that title away. We saw you win it. It's like when USC had to vacate their Heisman and their national championships. We saw them win it. It doesn't really matter. You can say whatever you want later. They won it. They celebrated it. They had the party on the field. They celebrated that night. They got. Who cares what you do now? It doesn't matter what you do now. Whatever. Looks like Denver Broncos general manager John Elway is going to sit down with quarterback Peyton Manning and talk about his future. Peyton Manning, I guess, has been working out with a personal trainer, talking about whether or not he is going to return this next season. And the thing that this tells me, if John Elway is going to sit down, and it's not just, hey, come back and it's done, what this tells me is they are going to discuss, where are we at as a team? do we have the people? Because if we have the people and we feel like we can make a championship run, then this is a no-brainer. We bring Peyton back. And I know we can look and say, well, Peyton, we saw him struggle down the stretch, but we also saw him at the beginning of the season when he was healthy, and he was putting up big numbers. He looked very, very competitive. I'm not saying he'll come back and be better this next year. We know that's not going to be the case. But can he come back and still be able to compete? I would think so if he's healthy. So it makes me wonder if Elway and Manning are going to sit down and say, okay, where do we sit as franchise? Do we have the people to compete? Or are you looking at maybe rebuilding this thing? There's a lot of free agents and a lot of things at play here. Are we looking at maybe kind of starting a rebuild process? Because I wouldn't think Manning would want to be a part of that. And if that's the case, Broncos are going to have some really, really big decisions that they are going to have to make. We will we'll keep an eye on that story and see where this goes. I would think Manning would come back and Elway will take a shot, get some free agents, get some people signed, and we'll see maybe another year or two. We'll see. Speaking of coaches here in Denver, at least at one time, the Sacramento Kings are close to hiring former Denver Nuggets coach George Karl. And the rumors, at least out there, are that, you know, Kings center forward DeMarcus Cousins doesn't want George Karl to come in there. Doesn't want Karl. He says, hey, I'm not in charge of hiring and firing, but the rumors are out of his camp, kind of, that we don't want George Karl to come in here. Here's a few things to think about. First off, Boogie Cousins shouldn't be making any personnel decisions. Let's be clear about that. He is a very, very talented player, and I don't know that he's necessarily a bad guy. I think he made some bad decisions in college. What he has to realize is George Karl, yes, he's going to demand more of you, but he is going to make you a much better player. And the Kings, who at the beginning of the season looked like maybe they would at least be competitive throughout the season, have completely fallen apart. George Karl can fix that. Remember that this team here in Denver, this Nuggets team that is atrocious and is one of the worst teams in the league, remember that he had the core nucleus of this group in the playoffs just a few years ago. George Karl can flat out coach. He's one of the winningest coaches ever in the NBA. He's just going to help you, DeMarcus Cousins. I would think that, yes, he's gonna ask you for some work. He's going to ask you for some work, but it's going to be a big, big payoff. It will be a very, very positive thing. We'll see. It sounds like that's going to happen, and I think that would be a good thing for Sacramento. One last thing that I do want to talk about. Gonna talk just there's a story coming out of Los Angeles. I don't know if you've heard this one about Los Angeles Lakers guard Nick Young, you know, Swaggy P. Apparently, he fought a dolphin. I can't believe I'm saying this. This is actually true. Apparently. His girlfriend, Iggy Azalea, says Nick is scared of dolphins because he says he had a near-death experience in Mexico. He didn't say when. He was playing, and it was his time to ride the dolphin. I don't know where he's at that he's riding a dolphin. I've heard of petting dolphins. I've never, whatever. And he says the dolphin tried to drown him. So he had to get out of the water and jump out of the water and save himself. The dolphin was trying to kill him. I mean, hey, this is a dude that is from a life of hard knocks. Swaggy P fights a dolphin and goes on. How was your first Sunday without the NFL? Because it was rough. I'm not going to lie. It was rough. Don't have the NFL. Don't have the NFL. And in fact, Ed Sable, founder of NFL Films, he actually passed away on Monday at the age of 98. And if I had to guess, and I don't know this, I would guess it was probably from boredom for no NFL on Sunday. When you think about this, when you stop and think about it, Ed Sable, founder of NFL Films, he may be the most important person in NFL history. Think of the important people through NFL history. I mean, you've got Pete Rozelle, you've got Vince Lombardi, you've got George Halas, you've got even someone like Al Davis. Ed Sable found that football is perfect for TV. And the thing to think about, and we've talked about this a little bit in the past on the Daily Dose, football comes over so great on TV. You can actually watch football on TV, and it's sometimes a little bit better than it is in person. Baseball doesn't come through as well. Like, baseball is the national pastime, until we realized on TV it doesn't look quite as good. You kind of have to be at the baseball field for you to get the full effect. It doesn't come through quite as good. It's kind of like, in a way, kind of like hockey. Hockey doesn't come through as good on TV. Basketball is okay. Basketball comes through pretty well. Football comes through. It might even be better than being in person because you have the slow motion and you know, they have the music with it. And he completely changed what football was. Remember that football, going back, the big thing with football was not professional football. It was college football. That was where everybody watched. No one was watching professional football. Ed Sable came in, put music with it. He had football follies. He had, you know, the slow motion, and you saw the ripples and the ball spinning slowly in the air, and you were like, oh, this looks amazing. Football just comes through so much better on television than any other sport does. Ed Sable may be the most important person in NFL football history. He passes away on Monday at the age of 98. You know, I've actually, you might have heard last week on the podcast, I asked if anybody had some help with the English, what is it, the Barclays League, the English Premier League. You know, I said, hey, I need a team to follow. Because it's going to be Sundays, and until March Madness, I don't have anything else to watch. I don't have anything else to keep an eye on. So maybe I should pick up an English Premier team, and I don't have a team. And so the only stipulations that I said that I had were that I didn't want to be a front runner. I didn't want to be just give me the best team and I'll start cheering for them. I felt like that was kind of, you know, the whole front runner thing. And that I don't like red. So I don't want red to be the biggest color in their color scheme. I actually got a few suggestions. And I'll throw this out there again. If you have some more suggestions, I would take them. Here's the suggestions that I have so far. And I won't bore you with much soccer talk, but here's what I have so far. Everton, apparently, they're sitting at fifth place in the league. And the reason that I was told to follow them, they have the most Americans on their team. They're blue and white, purple and white. Okay, well, the Americans, I kind of like that idea because I don't have any ties back there. Tottenham Hotspur. I don't know what that means, but Tottenham Hotspur, they're kind of a scrappy team. They're sitting in sixth place right now, and they're blue and yellow or black and yellow. Newcastle United, sitting at 10th. They're kind of a sleeper team, but they're always kind of tough. Their uniforms kind of look like referee. They're like black and white striped. It's very odd. I felt like I would be cheering for the refs. I had one person just say, why don't you just cheer for Denver University soccer? I don't think they're in the Premier League. Otherwise, I would. But and I appreciate the suggestion. Go Pioneers. But I don't know how DU got in the Premier League. And then I did have someone say, just cheer for Manchester City. They're in first place and jump on the bandwagon. Who cares? And you know, I'm looking at Manchester City's unis. Got the light blue and then like a dark blue and then like a purple. It's they're good looking. You know, I don't know much about this. I don't know. I've got a decision I'm going to have to come up with. I've got some things I'm going to have to figure out, but man, some tough decisions I've got to make now. I'll have to think about that. I'll think about that. If you have a suggestion, you know, what English Premier team should I jump on? Feel free. Hit me up. You can, like I said, find me at Twitter, DailyDose22, or find me on Facebook, cd.daily.dose, and give me your suggestion. I'm in for any of these. I just, you know, I'll try to take a better look and kind of break this down. I might have to come down to mascots or something. I don't know. I don't know enough about this stuff. Anyways, did you watch the Grammys on Sunday night? Because, like I said, there was nothing else on. Did you watch the Grammys? I had to watch Pharrell sing Happy again. It's reaching a point where I'm not happy anymore when I hear that song. He's starting to make me think of like Bobby McFerrin with the Don't Worry, Just Be Happy, and eventually he just got angry from having to sing that over. I feel like eventually Pharrell is just going to turn into an angry person because he's had to sing this song every year. Didn't he sing this last year at the Grammys? I don't know. And then Beck, of course, the controversy. Beck wins Album of the Year. And then Kanye started to go up on stage, but then he stopped. But then after the awards were over, you know, he was kind of bashing Beck, saying, you know, Beyonce should have won. At what point does Jay-Z need to step in and just be like, hey, worry about your own. You got enough to worry about with Kardashian. Stop worrying about what my girl's doing. I feel like Jay-Z may need to step in at some point. I don't know. I guess to each their own. I just feel like, and how is Kanye? He's a smart dude. You know who Kanye reminds me of? He reminds me of Richard Sherman. Like, you're really, really smart, and you're an intelligent guy. Now just stop taking yourself so seriously and just settle down. Sit down for a minute. You know, on Sunday, we lost Dean Smith, a longtime coach at the University of North Carolina. Dean was 83. And you know, there is a legacy of Dean Smith. If you are, I talked to a younger listener who actually said, you know, I said, hey, did you hear about, you know, Dean Smith passing? And he said, yeah, but I don't know, some old white dude. I don't know who Dean Smith is. You are missing the story, because Dean Smith did more than just coach basketball. This is a true teacher of the game. And if you don't know, and I won't spend the whole hour or anything talking about, but for those of you who don't know, Dean Smith played at Kansas, actually played, you know, under Fog Allen. He started his coaching career as an assistant at Kansas under Fog Allen, went over to the University of North Carolina. And again, if you don't know this, Dean Smith helped integrate the ACC by recruiting Charlie Scott, who was the first African-American scholarship player at a major school, you know, down south. That didn't happen back then. And Dean Smith would go into, you know, segregated restaurants in the South with Charlie Scott, and he would basically dare someone to say something, because people knew who Dean Smith was. And they knew, here he is bringing an African-American player into these restaurants that are segregated. And Dean Smith would say, I'm going in here with my player, and you're not going to say anything about it. And, you know, the thing about Dean Smith was that he never wanted recognition for this. Like, they would try to, let's do, a, you know, an award for him, or let's do recognition. He always said, I shouldn't get credit for doing what is right. And you know, one of my problems with this is there's really not a good Dean Smith biography out there about him, because he never wanted a book written about him. He didn't want that recognition. He didn't want that. He didn't feel like he should ever put himself in front like that. I kind of wish there were. There's a few books that he wrote out there on coaching, but there's not a really good Dean Smith biography out there about him, because he would never really allow that. But when you think of how many innovations that Dean Smith started, and you might not even realize it. I know it as a coach, as a basketball coach. I know from a coaching perspective, he had a lot of innovations that they started with Dean Smith. You know, when someone feeds you the assist and you score and you point back at the guy that gave you the assist, that started with Dean Smith. That was his rule. You had to do that. You point to him because you say, hey, I didn't score that without you. You know how when a player comes out of the game and the bench all stands up, claps, you know, gives him dap as he walks off the floor? That was Dean Smith. When a player leaves the game, everybody has to stand up. Everybody kind of has to, you know, give the high fives and that kind of thing. That started with Dean Smith. The four corners offense, that started with Dean Smith. And not just as a delay offense, but the four corners offense as a way to spread you out and then attack you, started with Dean Smith. Points per possession analytics, that started with Dean Smith. Being a team that would focus on taking charges defensively, that started with Dean Smith. Guys that would tap and say, hey, coach, I'm tired. And you might think that sounds odd, but I can't go as hard as I can, so I'm tired. Take me out for a minute and let someone else play until I can get my air back. That started with Dean Smith. Diving for loose balls. Huddles before free throws. Timeouts after a made basket. Not when the other team's on a run, but we are on a run and we score. We're going to take the timeout first and keep the momentum. Those things started with Dean Smith. You might not realize how many of those innovations that he was a part of, that he kind of started from his program. When you look at his coaching tree, Larry Brown, Roy Williams, Jeff Lebo, King Rice, Tony Shaver, Billy Cunningham, Matt Doherty, Eddie Fogler, even George Karl, Doug Moe, Buzz Peterson, and even, you know, GM guys, Mitch Kupchak, Donnie Walsh, those all came from Dean Smith. I mean, it really is an amazing tree. And then, of course, the players. I don't know if anyone had as much talent year in, year out as Dean Smith had when he was in North Carolina. Probably the greatest player ever, Michael Jordan. But James Worthy, Rasheed Wallace, Kenny Smith, Brad Doherty, Jerry Stackhouse, J.R. Reed. Remember the chance of Herman at J.R. Reed. Sam Perkins, Antoine Jamison, Vince Carter, Phil Ford. And of course, you know, like I said, Charlie Scott, he had just amazing, amazing players. I don't know that he will ever, you know, I don't know. Do people, when you talk about the greatest coaches ever, is Dean Smith one of the guys that maybe is the forefront of your mind? But when you think of what he did, you think of the coaching tree that he had, and you think of the players that he had, he's probably on that Mount Rushmore of greatest coaches ever. And, you know, speaking of greatest coaches ever, Greg Popovich this week won his 1,000th game. And you know, I was talking to a friend of mine, and we were talking about what's more impressive. Is it Coach K winning his 1,000th game with Duke, or is it Popovich winning his 1,000th game in the NBA? And when you look at the coaches in the NBA who have won 1,000 games in history, you've got Don Nelson, Lenny Wilkins, Jerry Sloan, Pat Riley, Phil Jackson, of course, George Karl, Larry Brown, Rick Adelman. Those are the eight others that have won 1,000 games in their coaching history. It's tough. It's tough to kind of say which is more impressive here. Popovich is doing against the best every single night. You know, in the NBA, you've got the best of the best, basically in the world, playing that he's got to coach against every night. Here's my contention. My contention is that Popovich has had David Robinson, Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, whereas Coach K has had Christian Laettner, Steve Wojciechowski, Mark Allery, Danny Ferry. I'm not saying that he's without talent, but you know, Coach K is winning with a bunch of white stiffs. But that's just me. Hey, speaking of greatest college coaches ever, just to jump back to the college game really, really quick, I'm going to read you some stats I want you to think about. I want you to think about this real quick. In the realm of college coaching, in the realm of college basketball, I'm going to give you some stats, and I'm not going to put you to sleep reading these stats, but I want you just to hear these really, really quick and just kind of think about this for a second. You've got Mike Krzyzewski. He now has 1,004 wins. His winning percentage is right about 77%. It took him about 40 years to get there. Here are the coaches behind him, at least at the Division I level. And no, I'm not going to go down to Division II and Division III and NAIA. I don't care. Jim Boeheim. Jim Boeheim at Syracuse has won 963 games at about 75% winning percentage, and he's been coaching for 39 years. Bob Knight. He has won 902 games. He is only at about 71% winning percentage, and it took him 42 years. Not quite the percentage. Dean Smith, 879 wins at about 78% winning. Took him 36 years, did Dean Smith at North Carolina. And then Jim Calhoun, 873 wins, right at about 70% winning percentage. Took him 39 years while at UConn. I'm going to give you two other coaches. I'm not going to tell you who they are. I'm just going to give you their stats, and you tell me if they rate in that area. So Coach K was at, you know, 1,004 wins and about 77% of victories. Here's another coach. 1,098 wins, 84% winning percentage. Took 38 years to get to 1,098 wins. And then the second coach, 901 wins, 87% victories, took only 29 years to get over 900 wins. Those two coaches, Pat Summitt and Gino Auriemma, do we include them anywhere in this? I mean, are they being talked about as some of the great coaches? Look at their winning percentages. I know the women's college game is different from the men's. You have a significant drop off after you get, you know, down past probably 20, 25 top 10 teams in there, or top 25 teams in there. There is a drop-off. I get that. But that's a lot of wins. That's a ton of wins. And in very, very tough conferences, both for Summa and Auriemma, they don't really get talked about in that same conversation, do they? I don't know. Speaking of the NBA, let's get back to the NBA. NBA Commissioner Adam Silver, you know, he took over the commissioner's job about a year ago. How would you grade him? What kind of grade would you give Adam Silver so far? I'm going to give him about a B. B minus. When you look back at the job he's done so far, I realize it's just been a year. I like that he is a lot more open and transparent, obviously, than his predecessor. Stern, I had problems with Stern. I thought he felt he was a little bit above everyone else. And I wasn't that thrilled with David Stern. So I kind of like that. But when we look back at the run that Adam Silver has had, obviously he banned Donald Sterling, owner of the Clippers, for his racial, you know, remarks and all that stuff. And I think that really did endear Adam Silver to the players in the league. But looking back, that might have been an easier decision than we first thought. When it first happened, we were all kind of shocked by it. We're like, man, he really took a stand. And then you look back and you're like, yeah, it's probably easier than we thought. You throw somebody out. You probably wanted him out anyways. A lot of reasons to get him out. Probably wasn't as difficult as what we thought. Silver, he's still got some things he's going to have to address. And some big things. I mean, really big things. Bigger right now than what David Stern had recently. Because here's a couple things that I want you just to think about. There is a new NBA TV contract coming up. And that TV contract is going to affect max contracts, and it's going to affect free agency. And if they don't get what they want, the players could opt out of the current CBA deal in 2017, and we could be looking at a lockout in 2017. I know. It seems like we were just dealing with this in, 2011? Could be coming again really, really quickly. Adam Silver still has to address a couple of things, too. Lottery reform. There's been talk about how to redo the lottery because we have all this tanking in the NBA, and they don't want to say, well, we're tanking. Take a look at someone like the Lakers. It is obvious that this team's tanking. They're not even starting their best players, and I know. They're saying, we're just trying to get these younger players some experience so we can see if they can help us going forward. We know what you're doing. You're trying desperately to lose. I get it, but do you change the way the lottery is run right now to get rid of some of the tanking? What about age limits? I think both the NBA game and the college game would benefit from different age limits. I've told you my stance on this in the past. If a kid wants to come straight out of high school, go ahead. That's what's called declaring hardship, but it has to be hard. That means the league has to be a little bit better. Right now, high school kids actually can step in and play. If you're good enough to step in and play, Moses Malone, Daryl Dawkins, LeBron James, go ahead. I get it. But if you decide I'm going to go to college, I'm not capable of jumping to that level yet. I'm not even able to run my own life yet, let alone take care of my own expenses, live my life on my own. If you're not ready for that and you say you're going to go to college, then you need to stay in college either 2 to 3 to 4 years. Adam Silver's going to have to address that at some point because I think it's hurting the product right now just having this one-and-done mess. You have players that are going to college. They don't even really have to go to class. You got to go to class for about 3 months, and then you can pretty much do whatever you want. You got to make one round of grades, and then you're done. Adam Silver is also talking about playoff reform. Now, I've told you in the past I am all for playoff reform. I would like to see playoff reform. I'm all for this. And so let's just take a quick look at this. So right now, you have the East and you have the West. And the top eight teams go to the playoffs. You play them off 1 versus 8, 2 versus 7, etc. If it ended today, you would have in the East, you would have Atlanta versus Charlotte. Charlotte's getting in. Charlotte doesn't have, exactly probably the kind of team that you want to see. They will make you play some ugly basketball. But Charlotte would be getting in right now with a record of 22-30. I mean, they are significantly under 500. Toronto versus Miami. Again, Miami 22-29. I don't want to see them. Chicago versus Milwaukee. Washington versus Cleveland. Over on the West, you'd have Golden State versus Phoenix. Memphis versus San Antonio. Houston versus the Clippers. And Portland versus Dallas. I don't want to bore you with all that. But here is the proposal that Adam Silver is talking about. What if you had the six division winners, you're automatically in, and then we take conference completely out of it, and we just take the next 10 best teams? Now you got my attention. Now that's interesting to me, because I would much rather see Oklahoma City at 27-25 get in rather than see Charlotte at 22-30 get in. If that were the case, here would be your lineups today. We take the top six division winners, and then we take the next 10, regardless of conference. It makes no difference. Your first round would be Golden State versus Oklahoma City, Atlanta versus New Orleans. Pelicans might give them some trouble. Memphis versus Phoenix. Toronto versus Milwaukee. At some point, we're going to have to talk a little bit about the Milwaukee Bucks. I don't know how they're doing it, but they are actually playing really, really well. Portland versus Cleveland. Chicago versus Washington. Houston versus the Spurs, and Dallas against the Clippers. That would be your first round matchups if that were to start obviously the playoffs were to start today. That is the proposal. Now, that's going to take probably a year, maybe even 2 years to do that. I like this, though, because like I've told you in the past, I want the best teams. I don't care about geography. Geography means nothing to me when we're looking at playoffs. I want the best teams. Give me the best teams. That's all I care about when we get to playoffs. And I don't care about, well, you're the east of the Mississippi. I don't care. It's nonsense. Nonsense. Hey, here's one another thing that we have to think about. And I don't know exactly where to come in on this, but another thing that Adam Silver is going to have to decide, and this might be a story that you haven't heard. You're familiar with Diana Taurasi. Obviously, the career that she had at UConn, the career she's had in the WNBA, she's won 3 championships with the Phoenix Mercury. Have you heard the story that Diana Taurasi, right now, you know, she plays for a team in Russia? And when she plays in Russia, she makes about $1.5 million. When she plays here in the WNBA, she makes about $107,000. And so the team in Russia is telling her, we would really prefer that you not play in the WNBA this year. We'd like you just to take that time off. You'll be fresh for us. We don't want you to play year-round. We're going to make sure, here's that $1.5 million, and why don't you rest up a little bit more? And she's going to do it. She's not going to play in the WNBA this year. At some point, the NBA is going to have to decide, do they truly care about the women's game? And I don't know what the answer is that, because I don't know, you know, exactly how the money comes. I have a guess. It's probably not very positive. But if you have a situation like this, where you're going to have players can go play overseas, make more money, and they tell them, hey, then don't play in the WNBA, Adam Silver is going to have to step in and do something. Do something. Trade deadline is coming up. That will be next week. Trade deadline is upon us in the NBA. And there are a couple things I want you to keep in mind as the trade deadline gets closer. First off, the Denver Nuggets are in the middle of a mutiny. You might not realize that. You may not know that if you're not here in Denver. But the Nuggets are in the middle of a mutiny. There is a coach versus player thing going on here in Denver. And it looks to me like ownership is just going to eventually rip this team apart and completely start over. They got rid of George Karl. I understand he was a pain to deal with, you know, and he won. And now you've got a mutiny on your hands where the players don't want to play for the coach. Coach doesn't want the players. They're butting heads. Ownership usually is going to end up shipping that coach out. Brian Shaw is going to end up leaving. But in the meantime, the Nuggets have some players that come trade deadline could be of some value. And I just want you to think about a few teams out there that might need some players. Like, say, the Portland Trailblazers, who could really, really use another scorer. What about Aaron Aflalo? What about Wilson Chandler? Or a team like the Indiana Pacers, who we saw last year in the playoffs, just didn't have a point guard. If they had had a point guard, they might have, you know, done pretty well. Didn't have a point. What if you gave Indiana Ty Lawson? I'm throwing it out there. I don't have any idea. But keep an eye on this Nuggets team, just because I think they're going to completely trash this roster. It is a mess, it is a train wreck, and I think they're going to completely have to rebuild it. A lot of pieces that don't go together with that Denver Nuggets team, and a lot of pieces that could be shipped elsewhere and could help a team that is close in the playoffs. Phil Jackson, out with the New York Knicks, has said this past week, I can't believe he said this, said that his moves are not working and the Knicks have been a complete failure so far. I'm a little bit surprised he said this. And I would wait just a little bit before I jump on this full bore, because there's a few things at play here. For one, you've got an owner who's a nut and can't seem to stay out of, you know, basketball business. But the interesting thing to me wasn't as weird as it was that Phil Jackson said this. It was the fact that the media is now questioning whether or not the triangle can really work in today's NBA anymore. This is why you're in the media. Because you don't understand how things actually work in the world of sports. You need to stay, and I guess I'm part, am I part of the media now? I don't know. But that's not how this works. Understand this. There's this mentality that the triangle offense is this crazy, weird, mythical offense, and you have to really be smart, and it's like rocket science. It's not. It's not. Everybody has this mentality that, well, Phil Jackson, he's the Zen master, and so this triangle offense, you know what the triangle is? The triangle is a triple post that creates triangles. I know, weird. It actually says what it is in the title. You have and all that means is I put someone in the low post, I put someone in the corner, and I put someone at the wing. See how we have a triangle there? Low post, corner, wing. And then I have options. So somebody should always be open. I can pass down to you in the post. I can kick it out to the corner. I can pass it up to the wing. And based on what the defense does, I have a different read. So I may cut here. I may screen here. I may go here. It's not that deep. This offense is taught across the country in high schools. People act like this is some crazy. Or you can even put someone at the high post, and now I have someone at the top of the key, and now I have someone at the wing, or someone at the wing and someone at the corner. Either way, I've got triangles, and I have options, and based on what the defense does, or based on where the ball goes, I have different reads. It's not this deep thing that everyone tries to make it. This isn't, you know, brain surgery. It's basketball offense. Here's the thing that is really, really affecting the triangle right now in New York. You have horrible players. That's the problem. It has very little to do with a triangle. It doesn't make any difference what you have. When you have good players, I don't care what offense you run, it works better. And if you have bad players, I don't care what offense you run, it won't work. If you give me Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan and Dennis Rodman, who is really underrated with his basketball IQ, I know he's a weird dude, Ron Harper, and you give me that group, you know, with Steve Kerr or whoever, I can put in shuffle, I can put in the flex, I can put in old blocker mover offense. It doesn't matter. They're going to be very good in it. And you know what? If you give me this current Knicks team with Carmelo and a bunch of people nobody knows, I don't care what offense you run. It's not going to work well. You can put in the newest, greatest, hey, we're going to go dribble weave offense and the stuff that Kentucky's running. It doesn't matter. It is all about players. Don't make this into some triangle thing. This is all about Phil Jackson doesn't have the players, and he can't get the players right now. This is where the media kind of loses me. NBA All-Star Weekend this weekend in New York City. Got, obviously, the All-Star game. Got some of the skills competitions. We talked a little bit last week about the three-point contest, the dunk contest, that kind of stuff. This weekend cannot come soon enough for the Los Angeles Clippers, who have lost five of their last seven. And you're starting to see just a little bit of a breakdown with the Clippers. It's not full-blown, but there's a little bit of kind of some funkiness about the Clippers. You had Chris Paul last week complaining about, you know, the rookie female official. Is it Lauren Holtkamp, I believe her name is. You have Blake Griffin now out for 3 weeks with the elbow. You know what the biggest problem with the Los Angeles Clippers is? Whining. That's their biggest problem. Shut up and play. You saw this last Sunday. Chris Paul is talking to Durant when they played Oklahoma City, down by 20. I get tired of the Clippers. I mean, Chris Paul, I get he's a great guy off the floor, and he seems like, I've been watching Chris Paul a long time. Dude is one of the biggest crybabies in the NBA. I mean, if I have to see him one more time at the end of a quarter, go look for a defender, run into him, and then throw up, and then be like, I got fouled. If I have to see that one more time. And then I have never, ever seen Jordan or Blake Griffin ever, or Chris Paul, for that matter, ever commit a foul. Like, I don't care if you rake a guy across the face and there's blood. They're like, I didn't touch him. What are you talking about? Will you guys just stop whining and play? And I know this all comes from Doc Rivers. I like Doc. I think he's a decent coach. Stop whining. Quit your crying. Clippers have never committed a foul in their life. Shut up and play. That would fix a lot of things. Moving on. Let's go to college football. You know, we talked a little bit last week about signing day. And I told you last week, I said it'll probably be Alabama and Florida State and Ohio State, and I don't know, like Southern Cal or Notre Dame. They'll come in with a bunch of players. That's exactly what it was. It was Alabama, Florida State, Ohio State, Southern Cal. Same as it always is. But, you know, I told you. I said I don't put a ton of stock into signing day. It's not as big to me. And, you know, I went back this week and I looked. Let me just give you the top players from the last few so-called signing days. These were the best player on signing day. Last year, obviously, Leonard Fournette, the kid out of, he ended up going to LSU. I think he's going to be solid running back at LSU. I think he'll be okay. The year before, Robert Nkemdiche or something at Ole Miss. He's okay at Ole Miss. I don't know. Lineman at Ole Miss. Mario Edwards at Florida State in 2012. He's probably going to get drafted this year. He's all right. He's not, you know, number one. The year before that, 2011, you actually had Jadeveon Clowney. But the jury's still out on Clowney. I don't know how great Clowney is. 2010, Ronald Powell went to Florida. No idea. 2009, Matt Barkley went to Southern Cal. Do you see what I'm saying? It's like it's not a science. So when everybody says, oh, we got the number one recruiting class, we're going to be the best team in the country, slow down. I'm not sure that's the case. I'm not sure you're really going to be anything. I don't know. I don't know how we rate these kids. Everyone looks good in high school, don't they? Everyone looks like they're great until we have to see how you deal with the bright lights, how you deal when it's a job. And at the college level, it is a job. Make no mistake, at the college level, it is a job. Talk a little bit. You know, spring training is going to be opening pretty soon. And I'll tell you, in Major League Baseball, the team that I'm really liking the most right now, can't believe I'm going to say this, is the San Diego Padres. Have you seen the job that this first-time GM has done back with San Diego? Is AJ Preller? I mean, he is doing the job in San Diego that I wish someone would come to the Colorado Rockies and do. I think the Rockies want to win. I don't think they understand how to win. They need someone like this guy to come in and show them how to win. Do you see the signings they've made? They go get Shields, starting pitcher, James Shields. They went and got Brandon Morrow. They have completely rebuilt their outfield. You got Matt Kemp in left. You got Will Myers in center. You got Justin Upton in right. And then you go get Norris, as catcher. I realize they still have some flaws. And I realize that going out and getting a team in this way hasn't always worked. But, hey, we're talking about the Padres. We're talking. You can't say the word San Diego Padres fan without throwing in the word long-suffering. Because that's just, it goes along with it. We are talking right now about the San Diego Padres, and they might make the playoffs. They have some talent. They have some ability on that team now. I don't know how they're going to be, but this is exactly what I wish the Colorado Rockies would go do. Go get some guys like this. Go get some players like this. Meanwhile, they're signing backup scrub pitchers that are coming out of the minors. Are you kidding me with this? I don't know. I don't know if the Padres. I feel like I kind of want to cheer for this Padres team. I'm not going to go as far as to be like my Padres. I can't bring myself to do that. But I kind of want to see how they do. I'm kind of excited to see exactly, what's going to come of this. I don't know. We're going to be talking in the next few weeks, and I'll get to this in a little bit, but we're going to be talking a little bit about NFL free agency because that's coming. And there are a number of big name free agents that are going to be out there, and we're going to break some of those things down. But right now, as we do every week, we are going to give you our Daily Dose Top 5. And our Daily Dose Top 5, obviously, I told you earlier in the show, Valentine's Day is on Saturday. And so, I've told you in the past, you never know where the Daily Dose Top 5 is going to go. We could inform you. We could educate you a little bit, give you some history, give you some different things. Or, we may entertain. You just don't know. This week, for our Daily Dose Top 5, I had to do some work, I'll be honest. I had to do some work. I went out and I found some of the Valentines being sent out by different athletes and celebrities. And I have some of those Valentines here for you that I'm going to read for you. And you don't realize that that's not easy to do. It's not easy to just go out and let's see what kind of Valentines, these people are sending out. Do you realize how many bushes I had to hide in? How many windows I had to peek in to see this? I mean, in addition to what I'm normally doing anyways, it's a lot of work. But I bring you this week the Daily Dose Top 5 Celebrity Valentines being sent out. Some here that might surprise you. I'll be honest with you. Some here that kind of surprised me. Number 5, Daily Dose Top 5 Valentines. Here's the Valentine that's being sent out. I feel like I should be reading like Barry White. Like I need that low. I don't have that low voice. I feel like I... Anyways. top five Valentines being sent out this week. This Valentine's Day is going to be amazing. In fact, it's going to be even better than the very first Valentine's Day. And I would know because I was there. That is from NBC's Brian Williams. Who knew? I had no idea. I mean, Brian Williams, would you ever think he would make our Daily Dose top five? You wouldn't think that. But he did. He did. There you have it. I mean, very first Valentine's Day, apparently he was there, is what we're saying. Apparently, Brian Williams was there. Number four on our list. And, you know, you think back of some of the movies and romantic comedies and even with a sports angle to them. And you think about, you know, Jerry Maguire, You Complete Me. And that's where our number four Valentine comes in this year. You Deflate Me from Tom Brady. I guess that makes sense. I'm assuming, is he sending that to Giselle? Is he sending that to a ball boy? I don't know who he's sending that to. But he sent it to somebody. Number three on our list of top five Valentines being sent out this year. Does this Valentine smell like chloroform to you? That's from Bill Cosby. Get this out of here. Bill Cosby has no business on this show. I don't need that. We don't. What is going on today? How did that get on here? I apologize for that one. That one shouldn't have been on there. I don't know how our screening process is going that we get to, you know, put things on the top five. But that one didn't belong here at all. Wow. Number two on our list. We're just going to move right past that one. Number two on our Valentine's being sent out this year. Valentine, You're My Favorite Mistake. That's from Pete Carroll. That makes sense. We talked about last week on the top five, the mistakes, errors in judgment at times that Pete Carroll has made. That makes sense. You're My Favorite Mistake. I get it. Made a pretty glaring mistake in the Super Bowl this last year. We all saw that one. And our number one Daily Dose top five Valentine being sent out this year. Valentine, My Love Will Knock You Off Your Feet. That's from Ray Rice. Baltimore Ravens running back Ray Rice. Again, I don't know what the screening process is to get these in. I don't know how we ended up here. I don't know. But Ray Rice gets our number one Valentine being sent out this year. Hey, next week, we will recap NBA All-Star Weekend. We'll talk a little bit of college basketball. We are starting to get down into, you know, into conference play and starting to see the way things are shaping up just a little bit. Hey, we've got the Academy Awards coming up. And you know here at the Daily Dose, we will talk a little bit of Academy Awards. We'll talk a little bit about some of the movies that are out. And like I said, we're going to talk some NFL free agency. There are some free agents that are out there. What teams should be looking, where some of these players may end up. Hey, if you have a chance, and like I said, encourage some friends, get a coworker, get a relative to listen to the Daily Dose that might enjoy it. Go on Podomatic. Go on podcastdirectory.com and give us that rating. Give us that review. Make it a good one. Say how much you love it. We've had a couple on there. We really do appreciate it. If you can do that, we would appreciate it so much because it does get us into the new and upcoming podcast. Hey, got to say a quick happy birthday to a friend of the Daily Dose, a caller that we've had back in the day and even currently that currently listens. Mike out in SoCal, got to say happy birthday to you coming up. Thank you for being such a great friend to the Daily Dose. As usual, got to thank JSP. Could not do this show without you. I want to thank everyone so much for listening. I really do appreciate it. Have a great week. Have a happy Valentine's Day. Take care of those people that love you. I will see you all next week.